Hello, I'm Neil McGregor, and thank you for downloading Germany, Memories of a Nation from BBC Radio 4.
Hanging on the wall in the German Historical Museum in Berlin are two portraits, a husband and a wife. The wife has sharp features, hair drawn tightly back. The man is dressed all in black and is much plumper. Several chins jostle above the high collar of the obviously heavy cloth of his jacket. They look comfortable in themselves, at ease with the world. But this man, Martin Luther, in the years after 1517, was to turn not just Germany, but the whole of Europe upside down.
By long tradition, saints and holy men are shown as thin, ascetic, otherworldly. Luther was different. He was clearly a man in the world and of the people. While a great university scholar, it was in part in defence of the people that he wrote his famous 95 Theses in 1517. These were a protest against corrupt practices in the church, and above all against the indulgences that the Pope was selling in Germany to raise money to rebuild St. Peter's in Rome. Luther believed that this was a fraud practiced on the poor. He held that indulgence, the forgiveness of sin, was a free gift of God, not something that the church could buy and sell. The 95 Theses began as a rather obscure scholarly dispute, but they launched a process that first energized and then split the whole of Western Christendom. The Reformation. Sixteenth-century Germany was a mosaic of hundreds of states and statelets, governed by dukes and princes, bishops and a host of minor nobles, every one of them holding their territories under the emperor, but deeply divided by rivalries. The Reformation added yet another complexity. It forced every ruler to choose, Catholic or Protestant. And across the whole of Germany, it created political crises, constitutional conflicts, and religious and cultural divides that have in some cases lasted until today. Luther is often in German history seen as the great divider. His attacks on his opponents were pitiless, not least his virulent writings against the Jews. Many held Luther responsible for the bitterness of the long religious struggles that continued for a century after his death and into the Thirty Years' War. But he is, unquestionably, also the great uniter. Germans, like everybody else, still debate, still disagree. But they all disagree today in Luther's German. Luther's influence on the German language was profound, and the reason for it, the evidence of it, lies here on a table in front of me in the British Library. It's a 1541 edition of the Bible, but unlike many of its contemporaries, it's not in Latin. It's in German, and it was translated by Luther himself. I'm with Sue Reed, the keeper of German collections at the British Library, who is about to show me their copy of the Luther Bible.
Yes, so this is the 1541 edition. It's known as the Median Bibel because it's a slightly deluxe edition. It was larger than some of the earlier versions.
Luther had begun translating the Bible far earlier than that. His 95 Theses of 1517 and the many other anti-papal tracts that he wrote were condemned as heretical. But they were mass-produced by the new technology of printing, and they rapidly spread far beyond his native Saxony before the Catholic Church had a chance to stamp them out. In 1521, he was summoned to appear before the emperor at the Diet of Worms and was instructed to recant. He refused. He was declared a heretic by the Church and an outlaw by the Holy Roman Emperor. In England or in France, that could very well have been the end of him. There would have been few places to hide, and he might very well have wound up burnt at the stake, as many English heretics did. But in the political patchwork quilt of Germany, the writ of the church ran only in those states where rulers chose to enforce it. And Saxony, where Luther lived and worked, decided in this instance not to. So the Elector of Saxony spirited Luther away from Worms to protective custody in the Wartburg Castle. And it was there, in his solitary cell, that Martin Luther embarked on his translation of the New Testament. Working with characteristic boundless energy, he completed the task in just 11 weeks. And by the end of September 1522, Luther's New Testament in German was being offered at the Leipzig Book Fair and distributed across Germany. It sold out almost at once. A second edition was needed within 3 months, and within a year, there were 12 more authorized editions and over 50 pirated versions. No German text had ever sold in numbers like this, since Gutenberg had invented the printing press 70 years earlier. Luther then turned his attention to the much larger task of translating the Old Testament.
He was working with Hebrew rather than with Greek, rather less familiar territory, and it was longer. And that was published gradually. And then in 1534, the first complete Bible was finally published. This is one of 10 complete Bibles printed between 1534 and Luther's death in 1546.
So we're opening the pigskin-bound volume one of the great Luther Bible, published in Wittenberg in 1541. And inside the front cover, I see a handwritten text. And it is signed, if I'm reading it properly, by Martin Luther.
Yes, so here he quotes the first line of the 23rd Psalm, Der Herr ist mein Hirt, mir wird nicht mangeln.
The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want.
Yes, and he signs it and dates it 1542.
So this is a Bible that either he owned or which he inscribed before
giving to somebody. He inscribed before giving. There are a few other copies that exist with the similar inscriptions.
This brings us terrifically close to Luther,
yes,
doesn't it?
Yes, absolutely.
In each one of the 10 versions of the complete Bible, you can trace Luther refining his theological understanding, working at his translation, and changing the language that he's using. The head of the Catholic Church in Germany had claimed that the German language was coarse and confused, unfit for the Word of God. And so Luther set out to translate the Bible into a new kind of German, one that was fit for the Word of God, but also fit to be read by ordinary Germans. There had been German Bibles before Luther, quite a few of them, in fact. They'd appeared in Nuremberg and Strasbourg and Augsburg, but all were written in the local dialect, and so none of them had much resonance beyond their locality. Every one of them had been banned by the Catholic Church. Luther's versions changed all that. They spoke to everybody and reached the whole of Germany.
He was a man of incredible learning, but he was also someone who connected with ordinary people and who could pick up their use of language, and that is exceptional.
Alexander Weber is a philologist at Birkbeck College in London, and he's studied the language that Luther used in his translations.
He had a very good knowledge of the use of colloquial language. You could imagine that the result would have been quite farcical, you know, the characters of the Bible speaking like German peasants. Quite the opposite was the case. It brought the Bible to life, and it was this formula that was different from the previous translations, which were very learned, very stilted, very educated. And this was Luther's success, his ability to handle this onslaught of the Catholic Church on his theology, but at the same time speaking to the general public.
In his open letter on translation, published in 1530, Luther revealed how he did this. He was not, he said, trying to translate word for word from the Latin or the Greek. He was trying to write in living German.
You don't ask Latin letters how to speak German. You ask the mother at home, the children in the street, the common man in the market. Look at how they speak and translate accordingly. Then they will understand it and they'll see you're speaking German to them.
It's hard to know which is more revolutionary. A scholar refusing academic diction in favour of the language of the street, or the order in which Luther's intended audience is listed. Women, children, and, lastly, men. This language has a new purpose, to speak to everybody. Luther's gospel will be translated not as theology, but as conversations that you might overhear. Jesus speaking as a German carpenter to German fishermen. The Luther Bible ran to 500,000 copies in his lifetime, truly a bestseller of its day. But how was it that it could sell all over Germany, across the many different states, each with their own regional dialects? German is split into what are called Upper and Lower German. If you lived in Munich in Luther's time, you spoke a form of Upper German that would be almost totally incomprehensible to someone from Hamburg, a speaker of Lower German, and vice versa. That, to some extent, is still the case today, except that there is now a common language, the Hochsprache, Standard German, the language that Luther created, as Alexander Weber explains.
Luther, we know from his letters, from his conversations, did acknowledge that he modelled his language on the language of the Chancellery of Saxony, which is in the middle of Germany towards the east, where the dialects aren't that extreme to begin with. There is a main dividing line, it's like a linguistic border, which divides Upper German from Lower German, and Luther moved across these borders as a boy, as a child, with his parents, and he was totally bilingual. He spoke Lower German and Upper German as a native speaker. It's sort of a stroke of luck in terms of the development of the German language that the key figure who had a major historical impact on the Reformation would actually be able to address an audience in Lower German and Upper German, and therefore find a sort of a balance between the two.
Luther's carefully crafted compromise language could, more or less, be understood everywhere. And so, astonishingly, it became the medium in which the religious arguments were fought out. Susan Reed again.
Luther's Bible just worked so well for everybody that it started spreading. And when Luther's Catholic rivals started issuing their own translations, despite the fact that they may have written long polemics about how dreadful Luther's translation was, they would base their own translations heavily on his, because linguistically he's worked so well. Whatever they thought of the theology and whatever tweaks they might make to get rid of things like by faith alone, which was the very controversial thing, they still used his basic language because it spoke so well and so fluently to ordinary Germans.
And so, perversely, because the religious quarrels in Germany went on for so long and engaged so many people, the language of Luther became the language of all Germany, Catholic and Protestant. By the end of the 16th century, written German throughout the Holy Roman Empire was essentially the German of the Luther Bible. And for 500 years, all great German writers, Goethe and Nietzsche, Brecht and Mann, have honed their language on and against Luther's. Today, even Germans who have never seen, let alone touched, a Luther Bible, unknowingly use its words and phrases every day. Sündenbock, scapegoat, and Herzenslust, heart's content, for example, are just two of the many new words that Luther invented. Der Geist ist willig, aber das Fleisch ist schwach. The spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak. Phrases now so familiar, they've become proverbial. Luther had not just caught the way that ordinary German people did speak, he had also shaped the way that they would and do. But on top of that, he also changed the way Germans sang. The Lutheran chorale, designed for the people, not for professional musicians, changed choral music everywhere. And Johann Sebastian Bach's settings of the Passion, using Luther's language, are sung not just in Germany, but around the world. For details of more programmes about Germany available on the BBC, or to see the objects and buildings featured in this series, search online for Germany, Memories of a Nation.